welcome back to this season 13, episode 7 of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Tuesday, the 5th of May, and today we're going to be bringing you community news, events, no events actually, and some tech news. And joining me are Mark.
Hello, Martin.
Hello, how are you?
I am none too shabby, thank you very much.
Good. And Alan, how are you?
Hello, I'm very good actually, yes.
So come on then, why are you both well?
Why am I well?
Well, it's a surprising outcome, I think you'll find.
I drank a lot of water today, if you must know.
Oh, right, okay.
So, yeah.
I'm well because I've got nothing to get me down. How's that for a positive attitude?
Yeah, not convincing. So, Alan, what have you been up to since last time we spoke?
I've been on a new podcast.
Oh, is it like an old podcast?
It's very much like an old podcast that I was on with my good friends Joe Ressington and Daniel Foray called User Error. But Joe's employment status changed, and as a result, we no longer do User Error. So,
did it change to It's Complicated?
Yes, exactly. Not that complicated, really. So we decided to continue doing this, but not under the banner of the previous employer. And we had great difficulty coming up with a name for this new show. So we went with the easy option of calling it The New Show. And so you'll find it at thenew.show. Nice and easy for everyone to remember that URL. And it's just us talking about life, the universe and everything, a bit of Linux and all that kind of stuff.
It's three men talking on a podcast.
It's a very familiar format. It does check out, yes. But we take questions from the audience. So people tweet at us and send us emails and tag us on Telegram and stuff with varying degrees of banal, interesting, philosophical or technical questions. And we try and answer them to the best of our abilities every other week. And we just recorded the second episode yesterday, which will go out sometime soon, I'm sure.
Excellent.
It's adult language, so it's not family friendly. I wouldn't listen to it in a car with your family unless your family likes swearing. but yeah, just bear that in mind. Probably wear a pair of headphones.
Right. So you would listen to it with your family, just not with someone else's family.
I would listen to sections of it with my family. I wouldn't.
Oh, dear.
I have played some of the segments to them, and I sometimes, the questions that we get asked, I sometimes ask the kids the question first to find out what their perspective would be. And it's quite interesting hearing their side of it sometimes.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes, I haven't listened to the new show yet. I've still got one episode of the old show to listen to.
Ah.
Yeah. So, Mark, what's new with you?
In an effort to keep myself active and fit while not going outside very much, I have been playing Ring Fit Adventure on my Nintendo Switch.
Is that a role-playing game with roguelike elements?
No, actually, it's a fitness game with role-playing elements.
Ah.
Come on then, how does this work?
Okay, so the Nintendo Switch, as I'm sure you're both aware, has these little detachable Joy-Con controllers. And this takes advantage of that by strapping one of them to your leg and putting one of them in a sort of resistance training ring which you hold in your hands. And it uses the gyroscopes in those and other sensors to basically track your movements. And you have to adventure your way through this world, doing various exercises to run through stages and collect items and fight enemies. And you're trying to defeat this dragon who is obsessed with bodybuilding.
Like they all are, of course.
Like they all are, yes.
I like that little mechanic. That sounds like fun.
But it's actually, I was impressed both how good a workout it gives you and how good a game it is at the same time. It is actually sort of a challenging and somewhat engaging game. It's not like Final Fantasy quality of storytelling, but it's, you know, it's a bit of silliness to sort of keep you encouraged alongside what can be, if you set it to be tough, is quite a tough workout.
Nintendo have some track history of making games that are actually good fitness games as well, don't they?
Yeah, I did have a Wii Fit back in the day, but this is actually considerably better at, you know, making you be active. The Wii Fit was good for doing, you know, weighing yourself and doing yoga poses and things like that. But this is actually, it's much, because it's strapped to your body, it's much more varied what it can do. Obviously, it's not perfect. You could fool it very easily if you wanted to make you think that you're doing the whole thing. And actually, you're just like moving the controller in exactly the way it needs to be moved. But, you know, if you're following it, then it does kind of guide you quite well into the various exercises, and you can make it as hard or as easy as you need it to be for your level of ability.
The graphical style is like a cartoonish 3D space that you walk around in, kind of thing.
Run around in. It's sort of, human characters, and a dragon, and a talking fitness ring controller, which is a bit odd, but that's, you know, what you get. But yeah, sort of cartoony, not quite like, you know, Legend of Zelda cell shading cartoony, but yeah, not nice. not realistic, bit of fun.
And do you double as a baby fascinator whilst you're playing this game?
Yes. Funnily enough, it works quite well. I do have an audience of one while I'm playing.
Brilliant. Right, should we get on with the rest of the show? And now it's time for some community news. First this week, Mark Shuttleworth has been speaking to Steve Vaughan Nichols at ZDNet about Canonical now being self-sustaining and no longer having to rely upon Mark for financial support.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
I like how we as employees hear about this via ZDNet. That's quite good.
Oh, you didn't know this already then?
No, I wasn't aware. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess I should be aware of this kind of stuff. But I mean, it's not that we announce it. There's no blog post on Ubuntu.com. You know, it's interesting conversation with a journalist, I guess.
Yeah. And there's a bit of digging there into the sort of the accounts which have to be filed legally with UK Companies House that sort of show, I mean, they're not completely up to date, but show for the past few years that backs up what he's saying about the company's financial position, which is good.
Yeah. So when gallivanting was a thing, can you remember those days? Gallivanting here, gallivanting there.
Outside.
In a foreign country. I went to New York to do an analyst event, I think it was called, in August, September time last year. And that was the first time I heard Mark like announce this to a group of financial analysts. And it was repeated again in the media briefings and analyst briefings leading up to the Ubuntu 2004 LTS launch a couple of weeks ago. Mark, what have you got?
Well, we now know the code name for Ubuntu 2010. It's going to be the Groovy Gorilla.
It is indeed. What a fabulous name.
Yes, and it's one that everyone knows how to pronounce, hopefully.
Yes.
You don't have to look up gorillas online to find out what they are.
Well, yeah, you know what they are. You know how to say groovy.
Yeah.
Yes.
This particular code name has a slightly different origin than the usual code names.
Here we go.
Mark didn't come up with this particular code name.
Ah. Does that mean we're about to find out who did?
I did.
Oh.
So, yeah, I was feeling cheeky on the Friday after release, and I just messaged Mark and I said, I would like a Groovy Gorilla, please. And he just replied and said, done, make it so. And I was like, oh, that's excellent, but now I have no idea what to do next. So I had to go and find some colleagues that actually know what you're supposed to do when you have the next code name and open the archive with the new name.
So when you went to your colleagues and told them the new name is Groovy Gorilla, did they believe you? Because that's not normally how it happens, as I understand.
I had the presence of mind to take some screenshots of the chat conversation with Mark to use as evidence to get the process started.
So have you kept those screenshots for doctoring next time, so you can make sure the next release is whatever you want to call it?
I think this is my one opportunity to do this has now been burned, but I'm quite happy. I think Groovy Gorilla is a fun name, and I'm really looking forward to the artwork that, you know, the community and also our design team create for this mascot. So this will undoubtedly be my favourite mascot now. So, Alan, what about you? What have you got in the news?
A blog post from cybersecurity firm Rule 4. They've done a security audit of Ubuntu Core as an IoT platform.
Oh, crikey. Yes. How did that go?
I've got some choice quotes here.
Okay.
Apparently, Ubuntu Core represents a secure, structured system for large-scale IoT device deployment and software lifecycle management.
Yeah,
that's important.
It's good that they say this, because that is what it was designed to do.
I don't think there's anything in there surprising. It's quite short, and there's a link to a detailed white paper. But I think it's good to have external people put their beady eyes on this kind of stuff, because
definitely,
even though, you know, we've got a security team and, you know, architects who design this stuff, but I think it's a good idea to have, you know, someone with authority who's outside the organization who can either say, yes, this is secure, or no, there are holes and here's how I would improve it in whatever way. I haven't actually seen the white paper myself. I should probably sign up and try and get hold of it.
You don't even
myself.
Have to sign up. You can just click a link.
It just a full white paper, as in a PDF?
Yes. Oh,
that's even better. Yeah. Oh, crikey, yeah, it's public and everything.
Yeah, wonders will never cease. But yes, I mean, I'm not sure if, you know, they say they did a full review and found no security, no critical security issues. I'm not sure if they had found critical security issues if we'd be hearing so prominently about this report.
Yeah, maybe they'd have like given us a little hint on the side that actually, yeah, you might want to fix this before I print this report. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how security audit reports work. Is that what they usually do, or do they just print it?
Well, some organizations have, you know, somewhat bent the truth a little bit when they've done these things in the past. But knowing Joe McManus, he's a stand-up guy. Mm-hmm. If this had been a not good outcome, I'm certain it would have been transparently shared after any findings had been addressed. Mm-hmm. He's very diligent. I don't think there's anything underhanded going on here.
So for an actual outcome, at the very bottom, it does say, at the highest level, no critical findings were identified throughout testing. This validates Ubuntu Core as a secure, well-balanced platform choice, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, there's no red lights or, you know, pictures of bugs and, you know,
triangles. Don't need to register a new domain name with with a fancy logo for the latest security exploit in Ubuntu Core.
I mean, it's interesting because Ubuntu Core is like a super cut down version of Ubuntu. There's very little in it. Like there's just enough to get going and build applications and appliances and stuff on top of it. So I think I would be surprised if there were. I mean, it certainly obviously talks to the internet, and there are things that it does, and the way it's set up and the way authentication is done. Obviously, there are opportunities for there to be holes. But yeah, I found it. It's good. It's a good thing that people are doing this.
As we're on a security topic, I found out the other day that Joan McManus and the security team participated in Pwn to Own as Ubuntu just recently.
Oh, really?
And they were both some people judges and some people, you know, doing the capture the flag thing. And there was a vulnerability discovered, but it turned out to be a kernel bug. which has since been, filed under embargo and fixed. And Joe was very pleased that not only was Ubuntu the first distro to carry the patch for that particular vulnerability, but they were also the first people to release patches discovered at Pwn to Own. So they're going to continue appearing at that event as well, it sounds like. I read with interest that Ubuntu Studio is going to be switching desktop environments, and I almost couldn't contain my excitement to read what the next words were, and then was immediately disappointed. So,
not switching to Mate then.
So previously they used XFCE by default.
That's right.
They have done forever, I think.
And I think so.
You were hoping that they would upgrade to Ubuntu Martin, right?
I was hoping they were going to go for the green version, yeah, but they've decided to opt for KDE Plasma, which actually I'm not too surprised to read, because a number of the utilities that the Ubuntu Studio team have developed specifically for Ubuntu Studio, particularly like Jack Audio configuration stuff, they're Qt applications. Mm-hmm. So there must be some competency with Qt in the team there. So it probably makes sense to align with what they know. So as of 2010, apparently, so it looks like they've been doing good work with the Kubuntu team. That's going to be some migration moving from XFCE to KDE.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Although when you said 2010, it triggers me every time. I just think of 10 years ago. So I think we're going to have to start calling it 20.10.
20.10.
Yeah.
Well, we could just call it Groovy.
Oh, God. Okay.
We're all going to have to call it. It's the law now. Everyone has to say Groovy Gorilla instead of 2010.
I think you mean
yes.
Martin's Groovy Gorilla is what you mean. That's what you want everyone to call it.
Okay. All right, then I'll allow it.
Are we going to have to start doing Austin Powers impressions?
I'm looking forward to an influx of Austin Powers GIFs and memes over the next 6 months. Right, Alan, what else have you seen in the news?
Marcos Costales has written about folder colours, which is a thing that has been around for a while, and I know has been something you've worked with him on, Martin, on Ubuntu Mate, as a feature that allows the user to set different colours for different folders to make them stand out a little better, make it easier to spot in a sea of folders in your file manager. Well, he's written about how he's updated it to fit with the Yaru theme in 2004. And there's a PPA linked in the blog post, so you can get hold of this update and have different coloured folders that are based on the design that's in Yaru, those new funky folder icons. But you can pick and choose the colours that you want.
Oh, nice.
This is excellent timing, because I am hoping that in the Groovy Gorilla release for Ubuntu Mate, Martin's Groovy Gorilla release, right, we're going to, in Ubuntu Mate, try and make the transition to a Yaru-based theme. And therefore, it's good that the folder color stuff that we ship by default in Ubuntu Mate supports the Yaru folder icons.
Is there by default in...
Yes, it has been... Four years, something like that.
Nice.
Yeah. Marcos is lovely as well. And Mark?
Joshua Powers has written a blog post about the Ubuntu server installer, which I think we discussed when it was first released for 18.04. That has a cool new feature where it can auto-update itself. So if you've got an installer and you plug it into your server and boot it up, it now checks if there's a newer version of the installer available, and before you install you can update the installer so you get all the latest features of the installer.
That's nice. I've seen that on I think the one of the Arch Linux derivatives, one of the ones that has a graphical installer, has one that can do that. I think I've booted I can't remember which one it was. It might be the one that died.
It was Antergos.
It was Antergos, wasn't it? You boot it up, and if you just leave the desktop alone, the installer would appear. And obviously, this is a desktop and not a server. But the installer would appear, and then after a few seconds, it would relaunch because it's downloaded a new version. Mm. And I think this is fantastic, because having the installer baked on an ISO that lives for years, and you know, people put it on a USB key and keep it, or keep the ISO on their hard drive for ages and just think, oh, I'll just stick that on a USB key, and then go plugging it into a brand new server. It might not have, you know, all the latest updates and fixes because that ISO was written, you know, a year or more ago. So I think this is great. I don't install many servers, but I like the idea of having an installer that updates itself. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it's a neat little interface as well, with a little menu. It tells you what version you're running, what version it can get, and then gives you the option. You can either continue with the version you've got, or it'll download it and then carry on.
Oh, it's got the new kind of funky UI with the orange banner at the top and green buttons and stuff. I do like that. I do love a pretty looking kind of curses terminal style user interface. There's something about that I find super attractive, and you know, so long as it's functional and pretty, I love it.
Right, and we would have told you about some events, but unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond our control, there are no events happening right now. So on that crushing disappointment, we'll end the community news there and move on. And now it's time for some news headlines. So, this week I read that Billy Mitchell is taking his Donkey Kong high score cheating case to court.
So, rewind, who is Billy Mitchell?
So, Billy Mitchell is a competitive video games player. Video games as in arcade games. Has been for decades. And the two games that he's most well known for are Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, where at times he has held the world record for the highest scores in those games. And Donkey Kong has been a bit of a controversial topic because it was determined that he had not set one of his high scores, or his world high score for Donkey Kong, on official unmodified arcade hardware. So in 2018, this organization called Twin Galaxies, that run like an score card type system, rescinded his title, but also stripped him of all of his other world records as well.
Oh dear, how the mighty have fallen.
Yes. So Billy Mitchell has filed a suit against Twin Galaxies, which is planned for a hearing in 2020.
I find these fascinating because the people who do these like speed runs and, you know, highest score and stuff, they have very rigid rules on how each one of them should be played. And you are allowed to play in an emulator, and you can play in an emulator with additional tools, and those are called tool assisted speed runs. And but if you're claiming to have the high score for playing on original hardware, then it has to be played on original hardware. And there are people who analyze the videos that are made by these people, that is their proof that they did it. And often these videos from like 10, 20 years ago are done with terrible VHS camcorders pointed at an arcade screen, and they freeze frame it and go through it frame by frame, and they know that the algorithm on the chips on the board draws the screen in a particular way. So between this frame and the next frame, you would expect to see these blocks being drawn. But if it's run in an emulator like MAME, for example, this particular version of MAME draws the blocks in a slightly different way. And so they can figure out not only that it wasn't done on real hardware, but that it was actually done in an emulator, and which specific version of an emulator it was done with, and what revision of the ROMs. It's amazing the analysis that people will go through to debunk someone's high score of a 20-year-old video game. It's amazing.
I find this quite fascinating. Last year sometime, I accidentally bumped into a video on YouTube. I think it was called King of Kong. I think that's the film that's mm-hmm. Billy Mitchell's. In fact, I think I watched it on Netflix. That's where I saw it. Watched it on Netflix. So look, we're in lockdown. If you're bored and stuck for an evening, look up King of Kong. Watch that. That will give you the whole backstory. And then if you go and look on YouTube, you can find out all this fallout ever since and how people have tried to disprove all of this. Billy Mitchell is an enigma. He's an interesting character. I suspect has been up to no good, but also has been treated unfairly as well. But yes, I shall enjoy watching this drama continue to unfold. Have we got any more Nintendo news?
Yes, Nintendo have reportedly suffered a leak, and it appears to have gone via popular bulletin board system 4chan, and it seems like what's been leaked is via a contractor that Nintendo used in the past as part of the Nintendo 64 and Wii kind of era of machines. They had lots of resources in a revision control system, a CVS system, mm-hmm. and that got hacked and the data was dumped out. And it's a lot of data that's in there. There's technical specifications, including the board files at the board level for the Nintendo Wii, apparently, source code for the boot ROMs and source code for all kinds of other things, including a couple of games. But it, more importantly, is that whole boot process and the board design files, because if people wanted to look at this, they could potentially learn a lot from it and use that in order to make SoCs, for example, single-on-chip Nintendo Wii. Like you see these single-on-chip NES handhelds and single-on-chip, yeah. because the hardware is so well-known after all this time. But the Wii has been kind of a black box in that the developers of these devices and emulators don't have access to this information. And so it's interesting that this stuff has been uncovered and leaked. But the problem is it's still proprietary information. And it's a big danger area for any emulator author. And a lot of them have already said they're not going to touch this source code because it can taint them. If they make a GPL'd emulator or MIT license or whatever open source license, and it's discovered that data that was in this leak has resulted in changes to algorithms used, then they could be prosecuted for reverse engineering this stuff, and it could end up in court. And Nintendo are notoriously litigious about these kind of things. So
I think the bigger risk is, because some of these and a lot of these emulators are open source, if you haven't looked at that source code, how do you know if a pull request from another individual is a re-implementation of something that they've learned by looking at this these documents?
Yeah, it's very difficult. You can't tell if it's clean room fixes or whether they sat there and studied. It's one of those fascinating but largely shouldn't have happened. It would have been nice if Nintendo had openly said, okay, this is a dead console, here's all the data. But that doesn't happen because Nintendo are constantly making money from old consoles. Look at the little mini NES and the mini Super Nintendo. So the likelihood that Nintendo would voluntarily release this information is basically zero.
Does this also mean now's the good time to buy a second-hand Wii because it's about to become the most interesting homebrew computing device?
Well, that depends if the developers, I think you're gonna have developers that fall into two camps. Those who are confident that the act of looking at that stuff will taint them and won't touch it. And then those who are, morally repugnant and would look at that. Shall we say?
Yeah.
It depends who makes a thing.
But it's an interesting point about accepting pull requests, because I mean we hear there's quite a vocal portion of the open source community who are hell bent against contributor license agreements, but this is exactly the kind of thing which CLAs are supposed to protect an open source project from. If you're if you require someone who's contributing to your project to confirm contractually that they have the right to contribute that code to your project.
Yeah.
It gives you some pushback if you were then to find out that what they didn't have the right to contribute that to you. You do at least then have some coverage for that sort of thing. So, you know, it's an interesting case for why these things are actually important.
It's the whole SCO lawsuit all over again, where, you know, they claimed that certain lines of code in Unix ended up in Linux. And, you know, how can you prove that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this case, where something is inspired, maybe a pull request is inspired by technical documents that someone has read, that's difficult to prove, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Compaq went to great lengths to demonstrate a clean room re-engineering of the PC BIOS back in the day. Mm. Right, okay, Mark, what did you see in the news?
Some good news to finish on. ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, has withheld its consent for the sale of the .org registry.
Is that good?
I believe it's good. So
Were they going to sell it to?
Right. So there was. I think we discussed on the on a previous episode that the public interest registry, which is the domain registry, which registers .org domains and a few others, was going to be sold to Ethos Capital, which is like a private equity firm. And as part of this, it was going to be turned from a not-for-profit company for, you know, not-for-profit organizations to register their domains to a for-profit entity. And there was also some shenanigans going on whereby the equity firm were going to transfer a load of debt to the newly formed for-profit company and require them to service that debt as well as paying money to shareholders and so on. And it wasn't clear how they were going to do this without basically jacking up the prices of .org domain names, which for people who register .org domain names, of which I know a few, might not be a terribly welcome move considering that, you know, who .org is aimed at. Mm. So basically ICANN have gone through due diligence on this, including listening to concerns from the community and notably a letter from the California Attorney General, and decided that they are going to withhold their consent for this sale to go ahead. Now, I'm not 100% clear how this works legally, whether them withholding their consent completely kills this or whether it just means that they're going to frown if it goes ahead and, you know, tut loudly from the corner. But the way that it's being reported sounds like this is the sort of nail in the coffin for this happening. Mm. Whether we then see legal appeals against this or something else in the future, I wouldn't be too surprised given the amount of money involved. But so far, it looks like good news.
Yes, I'm relieved. All but one of my domains is a .org. Right, and there it is. That's your lot. Time to go. Get out. On your way. That's the end of episode 7. If you would like to come and have a chat with us in between shows, you can find us on Telegram, ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. And if you would like to send us your feedback, we do love your feedback, you can get in touch with at show@ubuntupodcast.org. And we have a YouTube channel as well, but nobody looks at that because everyone listens to this. So before we go, we would just like to remind you that you can pick up a fine, fine VPS from bitfolk.com, who have been sponsoring this podcast for 13 years. So thank you very much to bitfolk.com. And with that, we'll look forward to talking to you all next time.